the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Today, we're going to have a very interesting conversation. My interview guest today is going to be Professor Stephen Baskerville of Patrick Henry College. And we're going to be talking about his new book, Taken into Custody, The War Against Fathers, Marriage, and the Family. I got to tell you, I think it's a blockbuster of a book. Listening to this program and reading my website, you recognize the name of Stephen Baskerville because we've already had some conversations about some of the work he has done in terms of the history and effects of no-fault divorce law in the United States. Now he's writing about what I would call the divorce industrial complex, an enormous cultural conspiracy having to do with undermining the family and especially undermining fatherhood as reflected in the nation's current divorce law. We're going to be talking about how that literally has become a pernicious element in the society, and we're going to talk about how we as Christians should think about the entire question. Because we think we know a great deal about family, divorce, and how to put all this into perspective, the roles of mothers and fathers within the whole Christian worldview. But we need to realize there are some missing parts to the analysis that we really do need to understand what's going on in this culture right now. And I think Professor Stephen Baskerville is so well-equipped to bring us some information to fill in those gaps. We'll be looking forward to that conversation in just a moment. In the meantime, let me just review with you some issues going on in the news that are also of importance. Yesterday, I had posted on my website an article with the question as title, Is Belief in God Just a Natural Phenomenon? It has to do with the report coming from the Economist of London that the European Commission is funding a project known as Explaining Religion, the largest ever scientific study of the topic of religion, in particular trying to find a purely materialistic, naturalistic explanation for belief in God. The project began last September. It will run for 3 years, involve scholars from 14 universities, a range of disciplines from psychology to economics. And according to The Economist, quote, it is merely the latest manifestation of a growing tendency for science to poke its nose into the God business. Now, there is another very fascinating statement that comes from The Economist on this. It says that it's high time that religion is considered in terms of a naturalistic worldview. It's high time. Now, let's think about that for just a moment. In what sense does it make sense to say that all of a sudden we have to have a naturalistic understanding of belief in God? Well, let me tell you, here's the reason why. If you are an evolutionist completely committed to an evolutionary naturalism as a worldview, then you have to have a natural explanation for everything. We talked about this a bit yesterday. But you have to have a naturalistic explanation that makes sense, at least to some kind of evolutionary worldview. So you're going to have to come up with some reason why belief in God would have emerged purely naturalistically out of the process of biochemicals in the brain, neurons, and who knows what else. And so you're going to have these scientists trying to do this. Now, let me just remind you of a couple of things. First of all, on this program, we have repeatedly come back to the case of Daniel Dennett, professor at Tufts University, one of the four horsemen, so to speak, of the new atheism, who is trying to come up with a purely naturalistic and biological explanation for human consciousness. Now just imagine that. Just think of all this involved in human consciousness. You know, the ability to reason, to think, the whole perception of a self. Part of what makes human beings human, Homo sapiens, the word sapiens there coming from sapientia, the thinking being, is that we're able to think about even ourselves outside ourselves. We can imagine ourselves. We know that we are selves. We have a conscience. You know, dogs don't have a conscience. You know, have you ever come home and had the dog meet you at the front door and say, you're going to find a mess in the kitchen. I feel awful about it. I'm really grieved in my heart about this. No, the dog meets you and says, welcome home. I'm hungry. You know, there's no conscience in a dog. You know, there's no lion that's ever killed a gazelle and goes, wait, that was violent. I'm repulsed by this. I never knew this demon was in me. No. Well, yeah, he eats the gazelle. There's no conscience in a lion. But the human being is a morally conscious being. And how are you going to explain that merely in terms of neurology? How are you going to explain that merely in terms of biochemistry? Neurons and synapses firing in the brain. And if you do think you can explain it that way, how do you maintain human responsibility? Let's say you have a kid who disobeys. You bring him in and say, you're going to be punished for disobeying. And he says, sorry, it's in the genes. It was just biochemistry. That's all it was. It just fired that way in my brain. You can't hold me responsible. It's just chemistry. Well, I don't think many parents are going to buy into that. And it's because you really can't buy into this naturalistic worldview. It just doesn't work. There's another aspect of this I found very, very interesting. The Economist of London argues that the reason religion requires now a biological or a purely naturalistic explanation is because there are two factors that seem to be just common to all humanity, belief in God and language. And yet it goes on to say, language, unlike religion, doesn't cause violence. Now, that just really got to me as I started thinking about it. And I'm wondering, number one, where do they come up with that idea? Have they ever been to Quebec? There's an entire cultural war going on up there and has been for generations over language. You know, which language gets put on the signs? Is it even legal to put English on signs in some cities in Quebec? Let me take you to Barcelona, the Catalonian region of Spain. Let's talk to the Basque separatists and find out if language is ever an issue that divides people and causes violence and all the rest. Let's just remember that when the Olympics were held in Barcelona, the big controversy there was finally settled when they decided that they would simulcast every Olympic event in Spanish and Catalonian in order to prevent terrorist attacks that were threatened to disrupt the Olympics. So, number one, this kind of dichotomy between religion and language, this isn't going to work as if one leads to violence and one doesn't. But let's just remember that the whole thing really does come back to this. If you are an evolutionary naturalist, then you have to. Your worldview obligates you to believe that there had to be some kind of evolutionary need for belief in God. But if you come up with Daniel Dennett suggesting that maybe it's the need for the confidence to go on to life after death, maybe it's the need for a moral conscience. You know, some of the interesting things we even talked about yesterday when we were talking about this topic. But there's another aspect of that, Ed, and that is, as Daniel Dennett suggests, that it must have had an evolutionary purpose that now isn't needed anymore. You know, whatever it was, we don't need it anymore. It's now something we can do without. So we as human beings need to seize the control of the evolutionary process and evolve ourselves out of belief in God. It's a very interesting argument. But you'll remember yesterday something that I just have to come back to today, and that's the David Sloan Wilson comment that evidently it's not working out that way because it's the evolutionists who aren't reproducing and it's the believers who are. It turns out that the people who are having the kids are the people who believe in God. Well, guess what? Let's just play evolutionists for a moment. Maybe that is the last laugh upon the evolutionists. It's that they are breeding themselves into extinction, whereas those who believe in God are actually breeding more, and also, as David Sloan Wilson points out, not drinking, not smoking, and living longer, too. Well, go figure that out. It'll be very interesting to see where this argument goes, but we had a good response to that article at the website. You can always go and find it, even right now, at the website at albertmiller.com. And as always, we're glad to hear from you, not only by calling us, but also by writing us at the website at mail@albertmiller.com or go to albertmiller.com and drop us a mail right off of the web page. Very interesting report coming from the Associated Press indicating the violence in this culture that has led to a lot of the ultimate fighting that has taken place. And if you're not aware of this, there are an awful lot of teenage males and 20-something young men who are going into this ultimate violence craze where they are literally meeting in alleys, sometimes in bars, and they are beating themselves to a pulp. Now, it's just another reminder of what happens when a false masculinity replaces cultural confusion. And there is something very important and masculine about defending oneself, defending one's loved ones. But this kind of ultimate violence is something that's just sick. Well, now it is going down to younger and younger boys, it turns out. According to the Associated Press, ultimate fighting was once the sole domain of burly men who beat each other bloody in anything-goes brawls on pay-per-view TV. But now what is often called human cockfighting is going now to bare-knuckle fights, attracting competitors as young as six, whose parents treat the sport as casually as wrestling, Little League, or soccer. There is a group known as the Garage Boys Fight Crew that has made some of the news. And what we're talking here about is young boys who are really involved in the same kind of thing. And, you know, as difficult as that is to understand, what's far more difficult is to understand how parents become complicit in this. And listen to one parent speaking here saying, when they got out of the cage, they go back and play video games together. It doesn't matter who won and who lost. They're still little buddies, end quote. Well, that's still sick. And it's just another reminder to us again that when you return to the basic question, it is this. How can anyone answer for why young males would do this? Well, if you're an evolutionary biologist, you have to come up with some explanation, but you're never going to get very far. This is where the common sense explanation works the best. It's because of Genesis 3. It's called sin, and that's why you have parents. And when parents become complicit in the sin, well, they're just rejecting the whole role of what parents are supposed to be. We're going to be back to talk about a related issue. Professor Stephen Baskerville of Patrick Henry College. We're going to be talking about his new book, Taken Into Custody, The War Against Fathers, Marriage, and the Family. We're going to be talking about the legacy of no-fault divorce, and we're going to be talking about what has really happened in the courts in terms of fatherhood and why there is such a subversive undermining of the role of fathers going on, not only with the issue of divorce, but in the culture at large. We'll be back with that conversation in just a moment. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. We talk about the issues that matter. We look beyond the headlines, look beneath the surface, to try to understand what Christians need to know, to think about how Christians need to think, in order not only to think, but to live like Christians. Coast to coast, and with listeners around the world, you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. My guest today is Stephen Baskerville. He is president of the American Coalition for Fathers and Children, also assistant professor of government at Patrick Henry College. Listeners to this program and readers on my website know this name. Stephen Baskerville has been cited on this program several times for his work, I think really brilliant work, laying bare the logic and effects of the no-fault divorce revolution in America. He's now taken a much larger look at this whole question of divorce, fatherhood, the family, marriage, and the future. The book is entitled Taken Into Custody, The War Against Fathers, Marriage, and the Family, published by Cumberland House. It's available in your bookstore. I would commend it to you. Stephen Baskerville, welcome to the Albert Mueller Program.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Now, I find fascinating the fact that you really have a rather aggressive title here when you are talking about a war against fathers, marriage, and the family. There are a lot of people who I think are probably unaware of this war. Help us to understand it.
Most people are unaware of it until they're sucked into it, usually through the family court system, through divorce or some other methods. But Americans would be very shocked if they knew what was going on in this country under the name of divorce, no-fault divorce. What we call divorce has become essentially a euphemism for government officials, courts, primarily social service agencies, to invade families, to separate children from parents who have done nothing wrong, to plunder the parents for everything they have in many cases, and even to criminalize the parents, to jail them without trial, and to turn them into criminals in ways that the parents are powerless to avoid. Overwhelmingly, the victims of this are fathers, though it sometimes happens to mothers as well. It's not a matter of gender bias. It's a matter of power and of money, of the huge machine that has grown up in the last four decades around the question of no-fault divorce and child custody and related issues.
Well, Professor, that's very helpful. I have to tell you that looking at your book, Taken Into Custody, I could think of about 100 different roads I'd like us to travel together just in terms of helping Christians to understand some of the issues at stake. But I want to come back to one of the issues that to me is most important in this. Before you even get to the angle about fathers, let's just talk about the divorce issue for a moment. In your work, you really demonstrate how the no-fault divorce revolution in the law has brought enormous consequences. Can you help spell those out for us? I think an awful lot of Americans, especially those who are younger, aren't aware of how the law really has been transformed in this area.
That's right. The term no-fault understates the problem. What it really is unilateral divorce, involuntary divorce. It allows one spouse to force divorce on the other, without the involuntarily divorced spouse having done anything wrong. In other words, your spouse can divorce you without you having done anything legally wrong or agreeing to the divorce. In fact, it goes further than that. Maggie Gallagher, in her book of 1996, describes it as the abolition of marriage. And that's really what it is. It is the elimination of marriage as an enforceable contract. The marriage contract is not in any way legally binding anymore. It can be broken without consequence by one spouse acting unilaterally, and the other spouse has no choice. Divorce is simply forced on that spouse. And
well,
interestingly, it's most often the father.
Let's just revisit the situation before no-fault divorce. At that time, society privileged marriage as a contract above other contracts because it was understood to be more than a contract. in marriage was understood to be the basic building block of civilization, and to dissolve a marriage was understood to be an issue of such consequence that there had to be cause. I think that's what people don't understand. When it says no fault, it really means really no cause. You don't have to have a cause. Now, one spouse can simply decide that he or she, and in a lot of cases it's both, one or the other, simply deciding, I don't want to be married to you anymore, and there's nothing the other spouse can do to prevent the divorce. Isn't that the ultimate issue here?
That is correct. And to be fair, though, this was happening even before no-fault divorce. No-fault divorce laws really just put the nail in the coffin. They just ratified and codified what was already taking place. So simply repealing no-fault divorce and reinstating fault in divorce would not solve the problem. The issue today has really become child custody. It has shifted the battle into the area of children, turned children into political weapons. Because what happens is not only can one spouse unilaterally divorce the other, but she, and it's usually she, can take the children with her. Or sometimes the father does it to the mother. But in most cases, the mother can divorce the father, divorces the father without any grounds, and takes the children. And she doesn't have to give any reason. After that point, the father's contact with his own children, when it's not authorized by the government, becomes a crime. He can be arrested for trying to see his own children without him having done anything legally wrong. And this is what's shocking. It has turned children into political weapons and political tools. Go on.
No, I want to come back to that in just a moment. But first, as we're going into this break, I want to ask you about something else. I've been concerned for years about what I've called the divorce industrial complex. And you really do a great job in your book of demonstrating how there's an entire pernicious economy based upon encouraging and facilitating divorce.
Oh, it's huge. That's right. And what's most important about it is this huge machine is government-based. It's not just private entrepreneurs in this case. It is government officials. It is lawyers. It is judges. It is the huge social service bureaucracies devoted to child, so-called child protection, child support enforcement, domestic violence, counseling, mediation. It's a huge entourage of hangers-on that are not only profiting from divorce, but increasing government power over private lives in very dangerous ways.
We're talking to Professor Stephen Baskerville, Patrick Henry College, about his new book, Taken Into Custody, The War Against Fathers, Marriage, and the Family. Professor Baskerville, a few moments ago, you were talking about the fathers as victims of this, and I think in that context, that's clearly the right way to talk about it. But ultimately, children are the victims in all of this.
Well, that's exactly right. This is the main cause behind the epidemic of fatherless children. The 24 million children in this country, fatherless children, are not that way because the fathers have abandoned their children, contrary to government propaganda and feminist propaganda. Overwhelmingly, it's because the fathers are forcibly kept away from the children. Fathers who have done nothing wrong are forcibly separated from their children. We know that fatherlessness is the single greatest predictor of deviance, of social and personal deviance among children, alcohol and substance abuse, crime, and low educational attainment. And yet we are told that fathers are abandoning their children. This is not true.
Now, when you're talking about this as a social phenomenon, you're not just talking about this as something that's affecting a few hundred thousand Americans. Give us some numbers here.
Well, roughly, according to the National Fatherhood Initiative, there's 24 million children in this country growing up without their fathers, and quite a few growing up without their mothers as well. Oftentimes, once the father is removed, that's the first step in the removal of the mother as well, and the eventual the children end up in foster care.
So I think that number... Now, just taken by itself, 24 million fatherless children in the United States. That's the kind of thing that ought to cause people, whether they're listening to this right now, you know, driving their cars or in their offices or listening to it, you know, by podcast later. That's the kind of statistic that ought to give us pause just for a moment as Christians to grieve over what it means, 24 million children living without a father in the home. And you know, there are sociologists, criminologists, who would quickly point to the social pathology that produces, especially boys without fathers. And yet you look at this and you realize that's just the tip of the iceberg. You know, if you look at how these children are literally, day by day, being robbed of the experience of having a father, and as we're going to return to talk with Professor Stephen Baskerville about, as fathers being robbed of their children, you're really looking at an insidious cultural conspiracy. And insofar as we're a part of this, because government is the agent fueling so much of this, then we too bear responsibility. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. It's the place where we look beyond what others in the news are talking about, because there's always more to the story. And if you're a Christian, you understand that what's often missing is, in many cases, what's most important for understanding. We'll be back to continue this discussion with Professor Stephen Baskerville in just a moment. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world. You're listening to the Albert Miller Program.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. My guest today is Professor Stephen Baskerville of Patrick Henry College, author of the new book, Taken into Custody, The War Against Fathers, Marriage, and the Family. We'll put a link to the book up at our website, which you can find today after the program. And he is also the president of the American Coalition for Fathers and Children. We'll put that website up as well. He has a personal website, and we'll also put that information up so that you can find out more about Professor Baskerville and his work. Professor, welcome back to the program. I want to ask you a question going right out of the box here, and that is that a phenomenon like this has to have ideological roots. Can you help trace those out for us?
Oh, it's very much organized feminism, yes. A historian named Judy Perico has documented this, that as early as the 1940s, feminist groups, along with bar associations, were drafting legislation for no-fault divorce. So the ideological subtext of the whole divorce revolution, although it's not well known, is very much the feminist movement. And Barbara Whitehead documents this in her book as well.
Now, Professor, this is really, really important. I think this could be missed by a great many people. I want to come back to this. This was not so much fathers, husbands saying, we want to find in an organized way, an easy way out of marriage. It was feminists, some of whom were describing marriage as a domestic concentration camp, saying we need to find a way to subvert marriage with no-fault divorce being a legal mechanism that would accomplish their goal.
Very much so. Yes, the feminist movement has been trying for decades to bring through organized through no-fault divorce, and they have been the ones that have defended it. They're the ones that have expanded this machine, this governmental machine, and they have fought divorce reform tooth and nail.
Now, let's talk for a moment about how all this comes together, and what you talk about is the war against fathers, and you're real clear about that in your book. You talk about judicial kidnapping, and you talk about the politics of fatherhood. So is there not a direct tie between the feminist origins of this and the fact that fatherhood has become the real target?
Very much so. The feminists were quite clear in the very beginning that they were out to destroy marriage. What we didn't realize was they did not destroy marriage by boycotting it. They did not destroy marriage by not marrying in the first place. They destroyed marriage by marrying and then divorcing, by marrying and creating this huge divorce machine, which not only breaks apart the marriage, but turns the children into weapons and criminalizes the father. So it's much more pernicious than just destroying marriage. This is a serious threat to a constitutional government, to civil liberties, to the very concept of a private sphere of life.
Well, let's talk about this constitutional crisis for a moment. How in the world can you, for instance, take away the parental rights of a father as easily and without due process as is done in the courts now, and this be considered constitutional?
Very good question. For decades, we've had a principle in the Anglo-American world that parents have a right to the care, custody, and companionship of their children, and that was held to be sacred. That has been undermined entirely in the last four decades or so, since the advent of no-fault divorce, since the creation of family courts, since the rise of the feminist, the domestic violence industry and the child support system. All of these things have undermined parental rights, first of all, father's rights, but parental rights generally. And it's happened, I think, because of a series of euphemisms. We talk about losing custody. We talk about a custody battle, a divorce, a nasty divorce, an ugly custody battle. What we're talking about here is seizing control of people's children, taking away people's children. In plain English, that is what is going on. The divorce has become a euphemism for snatching someone's children without the parent having done anything legally wrong.
You call this judicial kidnapping.
Precisely.
And yes. In what sense, just spell that out for us, in what sense is kidnapping the right word there?
Well, we talk about the father losing custody or going through a nasty divorce or custody battle, but from the standpoint of the father, he's sitting in his own home minding his own business. He's not done anything legally wrong, either civil or criminal. He's not agreed to a divorce necessarily. He suddenly wakes up one day and someone's knocking at the door, serving him papers. He's hauled into court, and he's told that he cannot see his children except when he is authorized by the court. And he hasn't done anything. He hasn't. It's the only judicial proceeding where you can be hauled into court without having done anything legally wrong. You're just minding your own business in your own home, and suddenly your contact with your own child is criminalized. You will be arrested for trying to see your own child when you are not authorized by the court. you are no longer allowed to have your own child in your own home. Not only that, you can be arrested if you can't make child support payments, which may amount to more than your income. If you are accused of domestic violence or child abuse, you can be arrested. You can even be arrested for not paying an attorney that you have not hired. So these courts have a huge number of ways of criminalizing parents, of arresting parents who are simply minding their own business.
We'll be back with more conversation with Professor Stephen Baskerville about the war on fathers, marriage, and the family. This is a very illuminating conversation. Frankly, it's pretty frightening, but it's the kind of wake-up call an awful lot of Americans need. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation where we need to know more in order not only to be intelligent, but to be intelligently Christian. We'll be right back. I'm Albert Rowland.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
You know, folks, I can point to specific books, essays, articles I've written that have had a determinative influence on my thinking because they help to fill in some missing gaps. And I think for an awful lot of intelligent listeners today, who ought to be intelligent readers as well, Dr. Baskerville's book, Taken into Custody, The War Against Fathers, Marriage, and the Family, is one of those books that would really fill in the gaps. Professor Stephen Baskerville is on the faculty at Patrick Henry College in Virginia. Professor Baskerville, let me ask you, you know, tie together for us what's going on the whole domestic violence industry, as you call it, the war on homeschoolers and all the rest. How's that fit into this picture?
Well, this is part of a larger assault on the rights of parents to raise their children as they see fit, and really on the whole concept of a private sphere of life. And what we're seeing against fathers in divorce courts is similar to what we're seeing homeschoolers the interference there, the California Appeals Court decision. We even now have many parents in intact families who are being accused on trumped up charges of child abuse, even though we know that very little child abuse takes place in intact families. So there's a huge trend here toward the invasion of the family, of private life, by the agents of the state. And I think we need to create an alliance in this country between fathers, parents generally, homeschooling parents, and because this threatens every family. Every parent is potentially vulnerable to this.
Now, and you're not denying that some domestic abuse, husbands, wives, and children does take place, but what are you talking about with domestic abuse complex?
That's right. Certainly it does take place, but very little actually takes place in intact families. Most domestic violence and child abuse takes place once the family has been broken apart. It's well known that the safest place for women and children is an intact home, a home with a father in it. Fathers are the natural protectors of their children. And yet what we find in divorce courts is that obviously, patently fabricated charges are used rampantly to separate children from their parents. And this is well known. Respectable law review articles now openly admit that false, trumped-up charges of domestic violence and child abuse are routinely used to take custody away from fathers in divorce cases.
Now, I guess the obvious question a lot of people are going to be asking, and I know an awful lot of listeners are probably shocked by a lot of this material, and rightfully so, is the so what question. So where is the fix here? Is there any return to sanity? What's your hope? What would you want to see take place to return to a protection of not only a father's rights but of marriage as an institution?
We need to broaden the dialogue, the national dialogue on marriage. It's got to include things like divorce, child custody, domestic violence, child abuse, child support. What do we mean by these things? What is the real role being played here? What is the nature of marriage and what is the nature of child custody? And under what circumstances can a child be taken away from a parent who has done nothing wrong? And I think this dialogue has to begin with the media and with the Christian media especially and with Christians. Because after all, I think that, you know, most of us still marry in a church. We make vows to God. We make vows to the congregation. We make vows to the local community in a way. And yet what's happened is the larger family, the community, the congregations, the pastors themselves look the other way when the marriage is then dissolved by the state. Now, the churches are up in arms about some selected issues, politically speaking, and rightly so, same-sex marriage and abortion. I think this is one of those issues of such gravity that Christians and congregations should consider speaking out politically as an issue of public policy against the desecration of what is, after all, their own ordinance, the marriage vow, the marriage ceremony. And this is something I think that we need to speak out because it is the state that is violating what is supposed to be a sacred vow to one another, to God, and to the congregation.
Let's talk about what this means for the Republic, for the United States of America. You are a professor of government. It seems to me that undermining the basic institution of civilization is no way to ensure the commonweal. It seems to me that this is just a dangerous experiment set loose that could subvert our democracy.
It is doing so already, and this has not been pointed out enough by advocates for marriage. It's poisoning our judicial system. It is poisoning our system of constitutional government. It's very similar to what Frederick Douglass said about the slave power. It is poisoning and corrupting every institution of government. You cannot corrupt the family courts without corrupting the entire judiciary and the other branches of government as well. So this is having a very detrimental effect on our democracy. It is violating civil liberties. It is violating the private sphere of life, and it is undermining constitutional government itself.
Now, what's it doing to the legal profession? Because this seems to be another angle, this whole area called family law. And if ever there was a deadly misnomer, it seems to be that.
Absolutely. Family law is the most totalitarian sector of government in our society today. And we see this. Judges, honest judges, are punished. We have judges who have been removed from the bench. We have lawyers who have spoken out about this and been disbarred and suspended. So this is very much poisoning ethics all through the legal system. It's having a very pernicious effect, and people are using terms like totalitarian to describe what is going on in family court.
Tell me, what's been the response to your talk about this, to your articles, and now to your book, Taken Into Custody?
I've had a very good response, especially from Christians. I was on several Salem shows and Janet Parshall and shows like that, and the response from Christians has been very, very good. The response from the secular media has also been good. It's been slow to get out, but once people find out what's going on, they are outraged. They feel they've been deceived, and they've been lied to in many ways and misled by their government, by these myths of deadbeat dads and pedophile dads and wife-beating dads and so forth. What this is a government assault on the family, on parents generally, and on fathers in particular.
You know, I think one of the most important points you made is that the safest place for a wife and children is in an intact family, because you're right. The domestic abuse statistics are very clear. It's after marriage or without marriage that you find the greatest incidence by far of domestic abuse and violence. Professor Stephen Baskerville teaches at Patrick Henry College. Professor, tell us a little bit about Patrick Henry College.
It's a wonderful place. I'm in my first year there, and I am very, very blessed to be there. My students are a blessing. My colleagues are wonderful as well. I highly recommend it for homeschooling parents and students and others. It's a wonderful place to teach, and the Lord is doing great things there.
Well, that's great. We have some other Salem connections there as well, including David Aikman of our editorial board, who also is on the faculty there, and Gene Veith, a good friend of mine, who also teaches there and has a very important role, I think, in the institution. So it's good just to look and see at the fact there are some institutions standing against the stream and helping to put out some Christian leaders who are able to be truth tellers in the midst of this kind of culture. Professor Stephen Baskerville, thank you for joining me today on the Albert Mueller Program.
Thank you.
All right, folks, we'll be back for some further conversation about this in just a moment. It's been really good to hear from someone who knows as much about this as Professor Stephen Baskerville, and hopefully this has become a catalyst for some good thinking on your part, some good thinking that needs to come as well. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. That was a fascinating conversation with Professor Stephen Baskerville. And let me just ask you this. Just imagine this with me. Let's assume that it was your ambition, sinister ambition, to undermine the family in America. Let's assume that that was your plan. And so long before all these revolutions took place, you would get together with some others who would share your ambition and say, what could we do? What would be the single most effective legal, cultural mechanism we could bring to play to subvert the family? I would suggest to you, you'd be hard-pressed to come up with anything more effective and more sinister than what actually happened, and that is the no-fault, so-called no-fault divorce revolution in America, because it did become everything that Professor Stephen Baskerville said it became. It became the way that marriage is subverted, not only individual marriages through dissolution called divorce, but the entire institution of marriage. And that gets back to something that is talked about in some cultural and legal circles, and that's this. You know, the advent of genetic testing has led to what some bioethicists call the tentative pregnancy, which is to say a woman's pregnant, but after genetic testing, she decides if she wants to continue to be pregnant. Maybe this fetus doesn't measure up to the genetic expectation. Well, that dynamic completely changes the experience of pregnancy. Now, pregnancy is not, I'm pregnant, I'm going to have a baby, but I'm pregnant, and I'll see if I want to remain pregnant once I get the information. So the pregnancy becomes tentative. I think that's the way an awful lot of people are now entering marriage, because no-fault divorce means you can get out. The same way abortion means you can get out of pregnancy, no-fault divorce means that you can get out of marriage. And so people are entering into marriage with a different mentality than before no-fault divorce. They're entering into marriage saying, let's see how this works. I don't have to stay married. If this doesn't work, I can get out of it. I mean, the whole point of a prenuptial agreement is to make the marriage a tentative marriage. You know, if it works, great, we won't need this. But if it doesn't work, and hey, let's just admit, maybe there's a pretty high chance it won't work, then we got this prenup that'll be in place that can help us to think this through. One of the most insidious parts of the conversation, and really thoroughly covered in his book, is when Professor Stephen Baskerville, author of the book Taken into Custody, The War Against Fathers, Marriage, and the Family, talks about this entire industry built up around divorce. An entire cadre of thousands and thousands of lawyers who have to actually have more divorces in order to have more business, who have to encourage divorce, who have to suggest that divorce is the way out of this. And then you have this this horribly misnamed law field or practice known as family law, when in the main it's about tearing families apart, not putting them together. It's about dissolving marriages, not keeping them together. The social pathology of all this is evident. Just to consider that one statistic Professor Baskerville mentioned, 24 million American children without a father in the home. Then you ask the question, how do we get here? And, of course, the equally important question, where do we go from here? I would suggest that you read Professor Baskerville's book, and I would suggest that you, as intelligent Christians, be talking about this with your friends, neighbors, fellow church members, fellow believers, because this is an issue that really demands not only a Christian understanding, but a Christian response. Back tomorrow and every weekday for Intelligent Christian Conversation, this is the Albert Miller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.